Okay, thank you, Steph. Three Bible readings, three lessons that God teaches us about harvest. Here's the first lesson, just from that reading Steph gave us. God provides food to show us that we can trust him. Now, boys and girls, I want you to imagine you're out in the desert, just like those people in Israel in that Bible reading. You're out in the desert, okay? Gets very hot in the daytime, very cold at night. You're staying in a tent with your family, and mum, dad comes, and they tuck you into bed, they pull your blanket over you, and you say to them, and maybe you say this anyway, something like, what are we having to eat tomorrow? What's for breakfast? What are we going to eat when we get up in the morning? And mum just looks back at you and says, I don't know yet. I don't know. Because the cupboards are bare. I know you don't have cupboards in tents, but you know what I mean? The cupboards are bare. The fridge, yeah, I know you don't have a fridge in a tent, but the fridge back then was empty. Nothing in it at all. Out in the desert, do you have apple trees? And you can just go, well, I'll just go and pick some apples. I'll eat them. No. Can you go and just pull some carrots out of the ground? No, you can't do that either. What does grow in the desert? Any ideas? Boys, girls, any ideas? What would you find growing in a desert? Go on, Kay, what would you find? Cactus. Anyone here ever eaten a cactus before? No. Okay. I told this story in the schools this week in their harvest assembly, and one boy from Turkey started talking about how you can pick the flowers off cactuses and eat them and so on. And that wasn't what I was expecting. I don't think you can really eat cactus, can you, surely? There's a reason Tesco don't sell cactus and we don't slice it up and put it in stews and pies and things. And surely the reason for that must be it doesn't taste very nice. Well, people of Israel are there in the wilderness. They've been slaves. They've been in Egypt. They've been in slavery. But God had done this incredible miracle and he'd saved them from that slavery. But off they go into the desert, and then as they get to the Red Sea, they look behind them and they discover the Egyptians are chasing them. They've changed their mind. They want to get them back and make them slaves again. So they're faced with this huge sea in front of them one way, and behind them, the Egyptians closing in, chasing them down. What was going to happen? Well, God did something special and amazing, and the sea parted and they were able to walk through the middle of it. Now, you'd think, wouldn't you, that if you'd had something like that happen in your life, that you saw the sea going to both sides and you were able to walk through the middle, and you'd seen God save you from that, you'd think, you'd know, well, God can do anything, can't he? If he can do that for me and rescue me from that situation, then I can trust him for whatever I need. But do you know what? Within a few weeks of that happening, they're out in the desert and they started to grumble. They're saying, we're hungry. We wish we were back in Egypt. So that Bible reading we just had, they're saying in it, we wish we had those big pots of meat to eat like we did. Yeah, we were slaves, but at least we had food in our bellies. It only took them a few weeks to forget the lesson they'd learned at the Red Sea, that when you trust God, even if you can't see a way out, he will provide. He will care for his people. Well, that's what happened again out in the desert. Something so unexpected. He said to Israel, and it's really sort of, it's a great picture he gives us. He said in that Bible reading, I will rain bread from heaven for you. Now, there's a film we like to watch in our family called Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs. And do you know what happens in this film? Food rains down from the skies. Milk, soup, peas, mashed potatoes. When there's a storm, burgers fly in. I don't know about you, I think that sounds great to be able to step outside, open your mouth, and burgers just fall into it. I think that's a great idea. But, you know, God says here, I am going to rain bread from heaven. So imagine waking up in the morning, you unzip your tent, you peer out, and the ground is all covered in white stuff. Not snow. I'm sure you've had that experience. You open your curtains in the morning and the ground's white with snow. Not mashed potatoes either. They look out the tent and they said, what is it? It was something they'd never seen before. They said, what is it? And do you know what? That's what they called it. They called it manna. And the word manna actually means, what is it? And they taste it. And it was basically a type of bread, a sweet bread. It tasted a bit like honey. God sent them this bread. And you know, he sent it day after day after day. He sent them birds called quails, and they could eat them too. God was providing for them. Now, there's a really very simple lesson in that story for us. But although it's very simple, I think it's one that we still find it very hard to learn. And like those people in Israel, we can learn it, then forget it, learn it, then forget it again. And it's the very simple lesson of this. When we put our trust in God, he will provide for us. Now, maybe there are all sorts of things in your life that say that, that's what I need. That's what I need. Maybe you feel trapped like those people in Israel did, trapped between two difficult things, the Red Sea and the Egyptians. Maybe you feel trapped. What's the answer? Maybe you worry about money or food or your health. Or maybe there are things in your relationships. You think, I need an answer to this. Do you know, God doesn't promise to give us what we want, but he does always say, when we trust him, I will give you what you need. And you know, what we're doing at harvest time is we're saying thank you to God for what he has already given us. We're trusting him for the things in the future, but we're also saying thank you to what you've already given us. We've got all these things over, all this type of food over here that we've been able to bring and donate, but we're able to say all good gifts around us are sent from heaven above. Now, for the people in Israel, that was actually happening. Manna sent from God. And we can say the same. All good gifts around us. God gives them to us. And it's right that we take a day to remember and to give thanks for that. So that's our first Bible reading and our first lesson. And I said we've got one or two groups who are going to sing for us. Our first group, our ladies, are going to come and sing a song for us now. So thank you. Thank you, ladies. Thank you, Bronwyn. Here's a second lesson from this Bible reading. They all do link together, the different readings we're having. Second lesson is this. God provides training to help us to trust him. Training to help us trust him. How much manna did God send the people of Israel? How much did he send? Well, I can't measure it. We're never given sort of weight or anything, but I can answer the question. He sent them enough. Enough manna for that day. But no more. And do you know what happened? If people tried to collect more and take it home and store it in their tent for the next day, they'd get up in the morning and the bread would have maggots in it, worms. It would be pretty disgusting. And no one wants to eat bread with maggots in it. And they didn't either. Now, why do you think God did that? Wouldn't it have been better, kinder, for God to give them loads and loads of bread, enough that they could collect it and it would last for month after month and they didn't have to worry again? Well, God says that the 40 years the people of Israel had in the desert, 40 years, a long time, isn't it? They had those 40 years as a training period. So I don't know if anyone's been watching, if you've been watching any of the Rugby World Cup, what you find in, well, not just rugby, but any sports team, you'll find every team has its own training ground. So what I'm hoping, as an Englishman, will happen after Owen Farrell's awful kicking yesterday, where he missed pretty much every attempt to kick the ball through the posts, I'm hoping he's going to go back to the training ground and spend hour after hour kicking again and again, practice, 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 because that's what they do. That's what you do, isn't it? You go to the training ground, you practice. It's boring, it's hard work, you do the same thing again and again, but then, when it comes to the next match, you hope you'll have improved. That's the idea with training. Now, what was it that God wanted them to learn in the desert? What did he want them to practice? Well, here's what it said in that Bible reading. It says, he humbled you and allowed you to hunger and fed you with manna, which you did not know, nor did your fathers know, that he might make you know that man shall not live by bread alone, but man lives by every word that proceeds from the mouth of the Lord. Now, I don't know if that surprises you, because it's saying there that God actually let them get hungry. When they went out into the desert, he didn't give them manna straight away. He let them get hungry. Was that because he didn't care? Well, the answer is no. I think this is a little bit like, I'm sure boys and girls, you've had this before, "Mum, can I have a biscuit?" "No, wait till it's dinner time. You eat your dinner then." You can't just fill up on biscuits now. As much as you want to, no, you need to wait. God knew better than to give them loads of manna straight away. Because, you know what, he knew what would happen if he gave them enough manna to last for the whole month. They'd spend the next 29 days enjoying the food and forgetting about God. They wouldn't be learning anything. They'd just be taking it for granted. "We've got loads of food. We don't need to worry about anything. We're okay." Actually, what God was training them is, remember that picture of lying down in your tent at night, asking Mum, what's for food tomorrow? Training them so that the answer, the only answer there can be is, "I don't know, but God will provide. God will give us what we need." That's what he wanted them to learn. The most valuable lesson, man shall not live on bread alone. It's not actually the food that sustains us. It's not that our safety isn't in having a big bag of manna over there in the corner. Our safety isn't having cupboards full of baked beans for an emergency. You know, you read about these people who are ready for some sort of terrible nuclear war, and they've got their bunkers ready and they've got enough food to last them 20 years in tins of food. Our safety isn't found in that. God says your safety is found in trusting in every word that proceeds from the mouth of God. And you know, more than that, I think God knew what they were like, and I think this is probably what we would be like too. God knew that if they were left to themselves, they would just keep on accumulating and accumulating. Do you know what they'd do? They'd have their eyes to the ground all the time, looking for more manna. They'd be out with their bags 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, filling bag after bag. Once they've got enough for today, well, now we'll get enough for tomorrow. And once we've got enough for tomorrow, we'll get enough for next week. And once we've got enough for the whole 12 months, well, we'll keep on doing it. You know, once we've filled our house with our food, well, we'll start building some barns and we'll save up enough for our children. And when we've got enough for our children, we'll start selling it and we'll make a profit. We'll head down to Egypt. We'll sell them all our spare bread we've got. We'll become rich. They'll spend a lifetime collecting manna, eyes always on the ground. "I must get more. I must get more." And they spend their whole lives thinking about manna and putting their trust in manna. And in the wealth that that's going to give them, the safety, the protection they feel when they have it. So God made one other rule about the manna too. He said they should collect it for 6 days, but then on the seventh day, they shouldn't. What they needed to do on day six was collect double enough so they had some for day seven. So on day seven, they don't go out, they stop, they rest. I think that would have you'd have even more faith needed for that, to actually think, okay, on day seven, I'm not going out. I'm not collecting anything at all. I'm just going to wait. Do you think that's one of the reasons it's so good to be here on a Sunday? Because you know, during the week, during the other 6 days of the week, we can get sucked into our, you know, just our normal way of thinking, and to a large degree, our world's way of thinking, that says, well, if I've got problems, I need to sort them out myself. I need to work harder. We can spend our whole lives thinking, it's all down to me. I need to fix this. I've got to sort this out. And God says, no, for one day, stop, rest, and remember that you can trust me and I will provide for my people. See, otherwise we become like the Israelites. They would have just kept on collecting manna as much as they could have done. Some of them did. They grabbed as much as they could. They took it back home. And they find the next day it's got worms, maggots in it. So God wants us to learn this lesson. Don't worry about tomorrow. Stop and rest one day in seven and enjoy. And trust me. Trust me that I will provide. So God used their hunger as a training ground. Training ground to learn that very valuable lesson. Now, for us, it may not be food. For us, it may be other things we feel we lack. Problems where we think, I don't know how to sort this out. Worries for the future. I think, well, what if this happens? What will happen there? Maybe you think, I've got such a difficult thing, like, I need wisdom, I need courage, I need bravery, I'm just scared for the future, I've got fears I need to overcome, what's going to happen? Maybe you just feel tired so much of the time. Or whatever it is we're worried about in life, God uses these things to point us towards Him. So we can say, I'm going to trust Him for that, instead of just trying to fix it by myself. God calls us to rely on Him, because we can, as we can. Okay, that's the second part of our three parts. We're going to sing our next song now. It's a song where one of the verses actually says, it quotes those verses we just read, where it says, man shall not live by bread alone. So that's the second verse. So if you are using hymn book, it's number 932, Seek Ye First the Kingdom of God. We're going to stand and sing this next song. Thanks, Terry. Okay, third lesson about manna, about harvest. Here's the lesson. God provides Jesus because we need to trust Him. We've been spending most of our time thinking about food, and in a sense that's right, isn't it? It's harvest. We're giving thanks for the physical food that God gives us. But in our third Bible reading, Jesus is talking about manna there, and He wants to sort of scratch beneath the surface a little bit, dig a little bit deeper. Now, there's this famous story. The Bible reading just read is just after another story. It's a story about where Jesus feeds lots and lots of people with some bread and fish. Boys and girls, do any of you know how many people He fed with just a little bit of bread and fish? Anybody know? Elijah, how many?
5,000.
5,000 people with just a little bit of bread and fish. And once they'd all been fed, and they were full, in fact there was food left over after He'd fed all those people went chasing after Jesus. They wanted to go and find Him. Do you know what they wanted? They wanted more food. He's the guy that gives us bread, and He can just make it out of miracles, so if we follow Him, we'll never need to worry about food again. He gives us all the bread we would need. That's what they want. They want full stomachs. And no, Jesus, in those verses Terry just read, Jesus wants to say to them, He wants to teach them a lesson. He wants to say, look, food is good. You know, we need to eat every day, of course. But He's saying, look, don't spend all your time, eyes on the ground, looking for food to go in your stomachs. Because actually, that's not the most important thing. Sometimes our most immediate need isn't the most important one. The hunger pains we feel in our stomach, yeah, it tells us we need to eat, but sometimes there are even more important things than that. And Jesus wants them to think about food that lasts forever. So a few verses later, Terry read this for us. It said, I am the bread of life, Jesus said. He who comes to me shall never hunger, and he who believes in me will never thirst. See, Jesus called the manna food that spoils, because it did, didn't it? Remember, it goes off, it only lasts one day. He says, don't spend all your time working for food that spoils. Yeah, you need it. Yeah, try and get enough food. Of course, we should be thankful, but don't spend all your time thinking about that, because that can be really dangerous. You know, sometimes life can feel a bit like it did for the Israelites with us. We can feel like we're in the desert too, and we're just trying to get through the next day, and we're thinking, what will tomorrow bring? We can feel like that in our own lives sometimes. What's going to happen tomorrow? How am I going to get through to the next paycheck? How am I going to wait this long on the waiting list for my operation? How am I going to live with this worry that where there's just no prospect of it getting any better, this situation that's just out of my control? There are times when we can feel like the Israelites in the desert. What will tomorrow bring? And Jesus says, no, there's one thing you need more than anything else. It's not actually for that situation to be resolved, although we hope it will be. Jesus says something far more amazing than that. He says, the deepest cries and longings of our hearts are met in him, that he can meet and provide for those things. You might think, how can that possibly be? And I understand you thinking that, you know, how can one person do something like that? I feel like that sometimes when I do try not to do this, when I end up watching romance films. And you watch these stories and it all ends, you know, the boy and the girl fall in love, and after a bit of a squabble and a fallout, they get together, they live happily ever after, they walk off into the sunset, and the idea is life's gonna be perfect for them from now on. They've met their perfect match and it's all gonna be great for them. And I think, no, come on, that's not real life. Don't tell me their lives are all gonna be perfect from now on just because they've met this one special person. No, it is like that with Jesus, because Jesus is our creator. And Jesus can do something for us that no other human being, nobody else you'll meet in this world, can do. You know, it's the one relationship we really need. It's the relationship with our creator. It's a relationship that we've broken through our own sins, our wrongdoing. We've turned away from God. And you know, sometimes at our worst, what we're doing is we're taking all the good things from God with one hand, and with the other hand, we're pushing him away, saying, no, I don't want a relationship with you. I just want the stuff you give me. That's what we can be like at our worst. But Jesus, in these verses, calls us back to him. He says he wants a relationship with us. He says he can satisfy our deepest hunger and thirst, the thirst of our souls. He can do it by forgiving us our sins, giving us peace with our Creator. So let's say this to finish. I don't know what needs you came to church with this morning. I'm sure there will be all sorts of things going on in your life. Maybe you're thinking, how am I going to get my work done in time? How am I going to pay the bills this week? What's the doctor going to say when I go back for my test results? How can I stop my son or daughter doing the things that, you know, why are they doing that? How can I help them? And they seem to be going down this path that doesn't seem right. You know, whatever worries and fears we have, Jesus promises that when we come to him, that we seek forgiveness from him, then we entrust our lives to him. He doesn't just promise eternal life, although he does promise that. He promises us that we can learn to live now like those Israelites did. Remember where we started? Remember with those children out in those tents, going to bed at night? What's for breakfast tomorrow? And Mum and Dad would have to say, I don't know yet. But they could also say with confidence, but I know God will provide. And then they could put their heads on their pillows and they could leave it with God, trusting him for tomorrow, because they knew he would provide, because he cares for them. What a wonderful thing that your Creator promises. You can put your trust in him and he will care for you. This is the Creator of the world making that promise to us. So let's close our service by singing our final hymn. It's number 106 if you're using a hymn book. Great is thy faithfulness. Because God is faithful. He proved himself faithful in the desert. He proves himself faithful to us today as we trust him. Let's stand and sing this to close.